It's Jeremy Clarkson here, and I just want you to know, I literally couldn't get by without the Farmers Weekly podcast.
Welcome to the Farmers Weekly podcast. This episode recorded on Friday, the 19th of April, 2024. From the Farmers Weekly news desk, I'm Johan Tasker.
And I'm Sandy Kirkpatrick.
In this episode, with fuel prices forecast to rise, we look at the prospects for red diesel.
We preview the new series of Clarkson's Farm.
How UK farmers could benefit from growing food in space.
And we join the farming runners on the start line for this year's London Marathon.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
But first, DEFRA has confirmed that a simple mix of just one herb, one legume and one grass counts as a herbal lay under its sustainable farming incentive. The rules for herbal lays under the SFI are much less complicated than the GS4 definition under countryside stewardship and could make it easier for more producers to join the scheme. That said, it's important to do it properly and herbal lays require proper management. Claire Wise, who farms beef and sheep in County Durham, spoke to Farmers Weekly's Michael Priestley.
I mean, herbal lays were a decision we made to implement on the farm before SFI, but we were always hesitant about it because a lot of the off-the-shelf mixes didn't fit our aims, as we're quite an intensive lowland sheep farm. So I wanted a finishing mix that the one we have in at the moment, for example, is just plantain, chicory, red clover, white clover, and the tiniest dash of ryegrass in there as well. But that wasn't available under previous scheme. So having the flexibility means that we can put custom mixes in that suit our farm. It suits, you know, I have one field that's a dedicated lamb finishing field with what we call, jokingly call, the power mix in it. And then I have another field that has a more traditional, it's not quite a GS4, but it's a more traditional mix in, because we're happy for things to grow slower and longer and for that to be slightly less densely stocked. You know, I have another field that I'm planning to paddock graze next year. That'll have something with a probably a more clover dense mix in it. So it just allows us that flexibility not to take something off the shelf that is created for somebody else, but to put something into the farm that really maximises our aim. So, we want better soil health. We're a cold, wet farm in winter. We're droughty in summer. So we want something that will grow and grow and keep going with no nitrogen. And I like all my lambs finished off grass with no creep or herbs with no creep. So we want something that is fast finishing for stock. So it just gives us that total flexibility to take the bonus of an environmental scheme and make it fit our farm rather than us having to fit somebody else's handbook. It takes some management mind. I mean, we're strip grazing, so there's a time factor involved in that. You can paddock graze it, but that just didn't work for us. It was getting away on me. So, you know, there is a commitment, and I think that's something that's really important about SFI. I think anybody that thinks, you know, putting a herbal lay in is money for doing nothing, it isn't. There is a serious management element to growing and maintaining a herbal lay, which does deserve the payment that's being offered. You know, it isn't an easy option, but it's a hugely beneficial option once you get your teeth into it.
What would your advice be to people wanting to tap into the SAM 3 option? It's a good payment, £382 a hectare. If they're sheep only or beef only or dairy farmers, do you think there are any principles of management or any tips, do you think?
Read up as much as you can. There's so much information out there, be it on social media, being, you know, in the press. There's so much information out there on them. So read up as much as you can. But I just say give it a go. The worst that can happen in all of this is that it doesn't grow. And as long as with SFI, as long as you've tried your best, you've documented it, you have done your absolute best to establish it, it's worth a crack at it. The worst that happens is something doesn't grow. And let's face it, with the current weather conditions, we're all getting pretty used to things not growing, aren't we? So if we're getting the money to buffer that, give it a go. And I hope you people would be pleasantly surprised by the effects it'll have on the farm.
That's County Durham farmer Claire Wise talking to Farmers Weekly's Michael Priestley, who joins me now. Michael, some welcome clarification from DEFRA on what constitutes a herbal lay. Some good opportunities, but you've got to get it right.
Yeah, although I think it's important to stress that the SFI scheme is changing all the time. I was at a farm meeting a few months ago, and some farmers asked, well, it says you must establish and maintain herbal layers with a mixture of grasses, legumes and herbs on the land entered into this action. And people weren't sure, does that mean I can have one grass, one herb and several legumes? Does it mean I have to have plural of each? Do I have to have three of each? What is the definition? And I think things have changed a lot since the countryside stewardship era, in which the herbal lay option was known as GS4. The code was GS4, and that herbal lay had it was much more prescriptive in how it defined a herbal lay and how it wanted it managing. 20% of the cover of a GS4 had to be in legumes and herbs, and there was you had to have five grasses, four legumes and four herbs or wildflowers. So it was a measure that was all about getting people to be clear on what they had to do, and it was about variety of plant species. And that's what brings different rooting depths and root structures and helps sort of condition the soil. There was also restriction in the GS4 management and how you could manage the herbal lay, in that you basically had to leave it alone from the 1st of May to the 31st of July. The current SAM 3 option, which pays a similar amount, it kind of relies on the farmer's interpretation a bit more. I've spoken to advisors, people who advise people on seed mixes, and one or two land agents. The whole point of the SAM 3 option is to increase pasture diversity, rooting depths, and really help condition the soil and build soil structure.
Some people, Michael, will see this 1-1-1, this choice of one herb, one legume, one grass, as an easy mix. They all grab it with both hands while they can. We know that the SFI is prone to change by DEFRA, often very quickly. We don't know how long this is going to be on offer. But you've got to grow a herbal lay, as Claire Wise in the audio was saying, in the right place. You've got to establish it correctly. You've got to manage it properly. It's not the panacea. It's not the silver bullet, as it were, that some people might think it is. It does have to be managed correctly to get the full benefit.
That's right. And there's lots of good farmers who've got experience of growing herbal lays, and advisors there's plenty of information online about how to grow herbal lays. They do react differently. They grow differently. I think one thing that's important is you need to let them rest. A lot of advisors say, graze them hard, but then rest them so they can come back. So you're not selecting too much for certain species. A herbal lay works well in a rotational system where you've subdivided your paddock and you're grazing in relatively intensely and then resting. It doesn't suit a set stock system. And people will say seed to soil contact is important to get them started, rolling the soil at some point, and lime and pH to help the clover. But there are farmers with lots of experience of growing herbal lays, because they are just quite useful for some systems.
Michael Priestley, thank you very much.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Hi, I'm Rory Hannam. I'm the Technical Manager for Hybrid Crops for KWS UK. KWS are one of the world's leading plant breeders. We make it our mission that you have the perfect variety for your farm. Our investment in research and development means that we are continuously striving to innovate and improve our varieties for farmers all over the UK. We are excited to announce that we're bringing a game changer to the farming industry. For the first time in our history, KWS are releasing our first hybrid barley variety, Innis. Keep an eye out this year at cereals, on our social media platforms and open days, where you can see Innis for the first time.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
You are listening to the Farmers Weekly podcast. Welcome along wherever you're listening to us from. You can email us at podcast@fwi.co.uk. We'd love to hear your news and views and what you've been up to. Sandy, a busy week this week, particularly on Clarkson's Farm. The new trailer for Series 3 has dropped or launched just a few days ago.
I think that's caught everybody's eyes, Johan. It certainly caught mine. I am really quite looking forward to it. And the trailer gives a good insight as to what's coming up. And I think it'd be really interesting to see what happens. They're obviously going to split it down the line with Caleb going on the traditional farming route and then Clarkson moving on to the environmental stuff. So very topical at the minute. And it'd be really interesting to see what happens. I'm thoroughly looking forward to it.
It will be this sort of competition that they've got. I mean, there's always been this sort of friendly rivalry, as it were, between Clarkson and Caleb. And as you say, Caleb's going to try and make as much money as he can out of food production. Clarkson, meanwhile, is going to try and make as much money as he can from the environment, with presumably the winner being the one that makes the most money. And I guess we can expect some harebrained ideas from Jeremy Clarkson along the way.
I'm sure we will. And I think there'll be a lot of people listening to this thinking it's going to be a foregone conclusion. But I think it's a great, and it has been, Series 1 and Series 2 were a massive success, and rightly so. They were fantastic, and they've done such a great job at raising the profile of farming and agriculture to the wider public. And I know a lot of people have said that in the past, and some people think Clarkson's a bit of a divisive figure, but love him or hate him, he's done so much for the industry, and I think Series 3 is only going to build on top of that.
You're entirely right, and I think what I'm looking forward to is the way that they highlight this dilemma that many farmers face when producing food, that in a lot of cases, food production is done at a loss. I think we can expect to see Caleb making a massive loss when it comes to producing food. And of course, environmental revenue on many farms is increasingly important. And we can expect, I guess, to see Clarkson making some money there. But of course, the environment isn't farming. It isn't food production, and you can't eat it.
It's not. But at the same time, it's the direction of travel of the industry. And it'll be really interesting. Obviously, the trailer's out, so I imagine the vast majority of it's been filmed, if not all of it. And I'm sure it will highlight the issues with the weather that we've seen over the past few months, with the farm being based in Oxfordshire, and the torrential rain that we've seen there and across other parts of the country as well. And that, again, should highlight and raise the issue or the issues that farmers have faced over the past 4 to 6 months. It'll be really interesting to see who comes out on top.
That's Clarkson's Farm returning to Amazon Prime Video on the 3rd of May. Keep your eyes peeled for that. Also, keep your eyes peeled for this week's Farmers Weekly magazine. Sandy, what's caught your eye there?
Really interesting and very important piece, Johan, as to why farming's biggest charity is moving to policy. And this is an article about the Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution, most commonly referred to as the RABI, and most people will know it by that. And it highlights their shift in policy to being more preventative rather than being reactive when it comes to farmers' mental health. And I think this is a really, really important change. And I liken it to the policies by the NHS, and you see it across other institutions as well. I mean, I'm type 1 diabetic and was moved on to an insulin pump about 5 years ago. And insulin pumps are actually really quite an expensive thing. They're about £5,000 per pump. But the NHS know that if you get onto these systems and you're better control your blood sugars, they will save infinitely more money down the line, reducing the complications. And it's the same with this. I think we really need to realize that when it comes to mental health, you want to intervene and try and prevent a lot of these issues rather than just being reactive. So it's a really nice piece and a really important change that RABI have made. And I hope it will help tackle so many of the mental health issues that we're seeing in farming at the minute.
Prevention, certainly better than cure, not just in physical health, but mental health too. In the machinery section, what's in your shed? One of our most popular features in Farmers Weekly. Dorset contractor Will Box hires in his tractor power, but he owns the associated equipment and implements. And Andrew Faulkner, in this three-page special, discovers the rationale between what he describes as the box logic. Some of the favourite bits of kit, the least favourite bits of kit, the latest purchase, and also how brand loyal is Will Box. You can find out all of that and more in the machinery section of this week's Farmers Weekly.
And a small snippet in the news section, Johan, caught my eye, where it says AHDB finds red tractor scheme beats Aussie and Kiwi equivalent. And this is around the AHDB survey, which says that the red tractor beef and lamb production standards are more robust than the equivalent schemes in Australia and New Zealand. But my biggest issue is that does that then transfer into more value for British farmers? And I think in a lot of cases, and a lot of farmers feel this as well, one of the issues with red tractor is that it doesn't necessarily translate into more value or a higher price in the retailer. So it's reassuring to know that the production standards are more robust, but I think everyone would like to see that translate into more value on the retailer shelves.
In the arable section, a root cropping special, potato blight, what we can learn from Europe. Dutch potato growers experienced one of the worst late blight outbreaks last year, and Richard Allison looks at what UK farmers can learn from Northern Europe. Also in that section, quite a lot on sugar beet. Are alternative weed control techniques viable? With sugar beet herbicide options dwindling, Mike Abraham looks at what researchers are doing to test options using artificial intelligence and robotics. And Emma Gilbard looks at why early foliar nutrition is key to sugar beet establishment, which of course is late this year due to the wet spring. Sandy, what else have you seen?
Something that's caught a lot of people's eyes in the news more widely this week, and there's a piece about it in the opinion section, on supermarket profits and striking an immoral note. I'm sure many of our listeners will have seen Tesco's recent announcement of a pre-tax profit of £2.3 billion this year, which is a very, very large sum and probably one that's very, very difficult to swallow for many as well, particularly on the backdrop of households struggling with the rising cost of living, but also many farmers and people within the industry struggling and not seeing their efforts translate into profits on the supermarket shelves. So, very interesting and a very difficult and very large sum to swallow for many.
A large sum indeed, not such large sums in this week's market prices. Let's see how they're doing. The finished steer deadweight all average this week is 487.5, down from 488.2 last week. Finished steer live weight, 272.5, down from 274.1. Into the sheep rings, the lamb's deadweight SQQ is 850.7, up from 829.5. The live weight SQQ also up 400 exactly, up from 393.9 last week. The arable markets, feed wheat is 172.4, up from 166.8. Milling wheat, 233.5, down from 234.1. Feed barley, 155.8, up 3 quid from 152.8. Oilseed rape, though, is 353 dead, down from 355.4. Feed peas are worth 260.6, and feed beans are worth 256.4. And our Wednesday morning ring round puts red diesel at 77.7 pence per litre, down from 80.6 pence last week. That's your markets for now. Well, as you heard in that report, red diesel down about threepence on the week. But what are the prospects for fuel, with prices expected to rise if the conflict in the Middle East escalates further? Well, Farmers Weekly's markets editor Charlie Reeve spoke to Neil Cooper, marketplace manager at data specialists Yagro.
So red diesel prices have been quite stable, apart from a few glitches with the Middle East. But we're around about 74 to 76 pence for 8 to 10,000 litres orders, generally the market is quite stable in the UK, so we tend to have a bit of a peak and then it evens out again in a few days. When the dry spells come, there's a lot of activity, and then when the rains come again, it all stops. So it's been quite quiet. I always think they'll always go up as demand increases, where that tends to happen in the UK, that as markets increase and demand increases, the prices tend to go up a little bit. But I would advise farmers to buy earlier rather than late. If I were a farmer, I would shop around and get some prices, because it's not always your local supplier that has the best deals, and you never know if you're getting the best prices.
That's Neil Cooper from Yagro talking to Farmers Weekly's markets editor, Charlie Reeve, who's here now. Charlie, the message seems to be secure your supplies of red diesel sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, if you look at the market at the moment, there's plenty of stocks in the UK. I mean, demand's been pretty quiet up till now, so they've got the stocks there. But looking forward, it's a bit of an unsure market. You've got global factors firstly. So you've got what's happening in the Middle East with conflict there, which could drive up oil prices. And you've also got demand likely now to pick up as we get those delayed drillings and tractors start getting back into fields. And I mean, prices aren't actually too bad relatively at the moment. Depending on order size, you're looking at sort of between 75 pence per litre to 80 pence per litre. So that's still below where we were in the spring. So if I was to give some advice at the moment, I'd say probably play it safe and top up the tanks while you can.
Charlie Reeve, thank you very much.
Are you going to transition live? The Farmers Weekly event to secure a sustainable future for your farm business. Meet like-minded farmers, listen to inspiring speakers and share innovative ideas. A great day out for a great farming future at Cambridge University Farm on the 9th of May. To find out more and to book your place, visit fwi.co.uk/transition-live. That's fwi.co.uk/transition-live.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Now, a vertical farming and technology manufacturer has been awarded £1.5 million by the UK Space Agency to develop an in-orbit space farm. Vertical Futures is being paid to adapt its controlled environment agriculture systems into a prototype usable in a commercial space station made by Axiom Space. It's expected to go into orbit in 2026, and Dr. Jen Bromley, Chief Scientific Officer at Vertical Future, told Farmers Weekly's community editor Matilda Bovingdon that it could have benefits for farming back down on Earth.
That's one of the key aims of the work and the wider consortium, is to make sure that the technology that we're developing is actually usable on Earth and will have an immediate impact on Earth as well. And to be honest, we think the likelihood is that we'll be able to roll out the technology on Earth before we even get it into space. So the sorts of things that we'll be looking at doing are, you know, very, very efficient nutrient and water use. In space, you can't put things out to drains, so you have to reuse everything. So we'll be looking at ways of making sure that we're reusing water in a very optimal fashion, and also the nutrients as well that we're providing to the plants. We'll be looking as well at managing energy use. In space, one of the major problems with growing plants that NASA have come across when they've been doing experimental work on the International Space Station is actually managing heat. So the lights that you use to grow the plants produce heat, but also the plants themselves produce heat. And so managing how that heat is transferred and dissipated is a really important thing to do, but also managing not producing that heat in the first place. And so the technologies that we'll be developing will be looking at, you know, really improving the efficiencies of plant growth and making sure that we've got very, very good heat management. And the final thing that we're developing in the project, which I think is really exciting, is autonomous plant monitoring, which allows the system to respond. Not on a space station, you have a permanent crew of four people. It's highly unlikely that any of those people have any agricultural knowledge. And yet they will be looking at producing some of their own food and plants for other purposes, such as biomaterials or medicines. And so what we need to be able to do is to be able to have systems that monitor the plants directly, not just the environment, but look at the responses of the plants and then adjust the environment accordingly to how the plant is responding. But we'll also need to be able to intervene from Earth as well. And so some of our partners at Save Astronautics are supporting the project in working out how best to manage data and manage compute and manage the transfer of that data to Earth so that somebody who is qualified within the agronomy field can have a look at that data, make a decision, and send a response back to the space station or the moon or Mars, wherever these systems eventually end up being rolled out to. And then the plants can continue growing, and those crew who are there will be able to harvest an optimal yield.
That's Dr. Jen Bromley from Vertical Future explaining how space-age food production can benefit farming here on Earth.
An interesting but slightly crazy idea, Johan.
Yeah, on the face of it, I guess it is, Sandy. The argument, though, is that the further we go into space, be it to the moon, to Mars, or to wherever, the more we're going to have to produce food while we're there, because it's easier to do that in the long run than it is to take it with us. And plants are also able to produce things like biomaterials or medicines. So I guess this really is just the beginning, and the autonomous agriculture project is it shows that the UK is at the front and center of developing this fledgling technology.
They have mentioned that some of the new technology will be able to be used here on Earth, Johan, but there is that debate as to whether or not we should be focusing our efforts down here before the efforts in space. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that is, of course, one of the big arguments, that we should be doing stuff down here on Earth rather than gallivanting across the solar system and trying to do things further away. But the counter argument to that is that technological developments for deployment in space do have proven benefits to life on Earth. I think there are about 30,000 commercial applications of space technology that have already entered the consumer market over the decades, certainly since the 1950s, and they include things like scratch-resistant lenses, the computer mouse, ear thermometers, smoke detectors, cordless tools, and memory foam. I'm not saying that that none of those things will be in existence were it not for space technology, but certainly I guess the race for space has sped up technological developments back here on Earth. And the people behind this project say that it will improve controlled environment agriculture, productivity, operational efficiency, and those technologies will be available quicker here on Earth, where we are looking at ways of producing food more efficiently to cope with challenges of climate change, water scarcity, labour shortages, etc., etc.
Every day's a school day, Johan. I didn't realise scratch-resistant lenses were invented on part of the space programme. But yeah, a very interesting story, and one that we certainly look forward to following over the next few months.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
And finally, take a listen to this.
It's Ed Mowbray here. I work in agriculture communications, and I'm running for the brain injury charity Headway.
It's Philip Case here, chief reporter at Farmers Weekly. I'm proud to be running the London Marathon to raise vital funds for the Farming Community Network to help struggling farming families through these hard times.
Hi, I'm Jen.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Emma.
And we're Team NFU.
We're running the London Marathon for Farm Africa.
Farm Africa helps smallholder farmers across Eastern Africa to implement climate-smart agricultural practices to grow and sell more.
Farm Africa also supports female farmers who are often the most vulnerable to the effects of climate change.
If you'd like to sponsor us, find our Just Giving page on NFU Political on X, formerly known as Twitter.
Just some of the farming runners in this year's London Marathon, which takes place on Sunday the 21st of April. Ed Mowbray, who's running to raise money for Headway, the Brain Injury Association. Phil Case from Farmers Weekly, who's running for the Farming Community Network. And Emma Crosby, Jen Cox and Lizzie Milne, who are all running for Farm Africa. And a special shout out too to NFU Norfolk advisor Flora Archer, who is running for the East Anglian Air Ambulance. Good luck, one and all, and indeed to everyone who is running the London Marathon on Sunday. It's great to see farming represented among the thousands of runners who'll be pounding the streets of London, and we'll put special links to your charity pages on the show notes page of this episode of the Farmers Weekly podcast so listeners can make a donation.
Great causes that they're all running for, Johan. Have you ever run a marathon yourself?
Do I look like a marathon runner, Sandy? I haven't ever done a marathon. I've done a half marathon, but not a marathon. And hats off to all those people out there, all the runners out there who have been training throughout the winter, the cold, dark and wet mornings and evenings. You've got my utmost respect. It is going to be tough, but as you say, it's all for a good cause. How about you, marathon runner? Ever done one?
I have, Johan. I ran the Brighton Marathon many moons ago, pre-kids. And I remember someone saying that you run one marathon to make sure you can do it. And then any subsequent marathon after that is just to increase or improve your time. So I've only ever run the one, and I only plan of ever running the one. But huge respect to anyone and everyone that runs marathons. After running it, I'm like, I never want to do that again.
Well, even running a marathon once in my book, Sandy, is a huge, huge achievement. So well done for that. Good luck to all the runners in the London Marathon this weekend. But for now, that's about it for this episode of the Farmers Weekly podcast. Do remember to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. And if you really like what you hear, do please leave us a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another episode. But for now, from the Farmers Weekly podcast, thank you for listening. I'm Johan Tasker. Goodbye.
And I'm Sandy Kirkpatrick. Goodbye.